This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. And what a busy old week it's been. In the league, Rotherham United won at Bramall Lane in the South Yorkshire Derby for the first time in 42 years. 3 days after being knocked out of the FA Cup by a team from three divisions below, Lincoln City beat a team from the division above in the Carabao Cup. And in the same competition, EFL strugglers Gillingham did even better, seeing off Premier League opposition despite travel hell. It's the final round of Sky Bet Championship fixtures before the World Cup break, something we'll be reflecting on with our special guest, one of the division's managers, on the official EFL podcast. It is the final round of Sky Bet Championship fixtures before a four-week sabbatical for the group stages of the World Cup. How are managers going to treat this unprecedented break? Let's ask Millwall's Gary Rowett, who's just celebrated his third anniversary in charge at the New Den and whose team are on course for a fourth consecutive top half finish. Now, we had Nigel Clough on last week, Gary. And he said he hadn't even looked at the World Cup, thought about it. But the fact that you are obviously going to get this break, did you factor it in from the close season? What, to give the boys a bit of rest and stuff and then do a mini pre-season? Or am I jumping the gun there?
Well, it doesn't surprise me with Nigel. I used to live in the same village about 10 minutes away. So I know it really well. So, yeah, no, he'd be watching baseball, he'd be watching cricket, he'd be watching probably anything other than the World Cup. we factored it in a little bit. I think it's like anything that players start asking around about, you know, they'll ask the sports scientists, they'll ask the physio, they'll try and get a bit of information, and in the end you just get to the point where you think I'm better off telling them exactly what they're going to get, exactly how it's going to work, and then if they want to book themselves a little breakaway with a missus and the family, then so be it. It's unusual, isn't it? We don't get many opportunities to do it and get away at this time of the year. And it's a hectic EFL schedule, particularly in the Championship, as always. So any chance for a break, I think, is worth preempting and at least having a little bit of a plan around. We've sort of known what we'll get for a little while.
To that end, then, are you absolutely knackered, glad of the break, or is a little bit of you anxious that you've been in a good groove, you're in a good place, you're where Millwall fans will associate the club with being over the past few years, as I said in your intro? Are you worried about you start again and something slips out of sync?
Yeah, I suppose in some ways. I think in the Championship, I think you're always grateful for a little bit of a break because it's so relentless, you know, with the travelling, with everything else. Particularly when you're in South London, you know, everywhere seems to be a million miles away in traffic. So, but at the same time, we're in a good run of form, and you know, we don't usually have this type of run of form before Christmas. We're usually quite a strong team after the turn of the year. But I think we've, for the last seven or eight games, I think we're around 2 points a game. So we're in a good sort of flow, and sometimes you want that to continue, but we've got, like every squad, we've got two or three key players out injured. They'll be back by the time we get back after the international break. And I think you take it for what it is and you know, we use it to maybe give players a little breather.
Yeah, I mean, because obviously there will be a lot of football fanatics who become footballers, do you therefore have to take into account as well that if there are still some early morning or morning games going on when the boys are training, there is going to be distraction and they are going to be reluctant, and you will be trying to run training sessions in the gap between the final whistle on the 10 o'clock kickoff and get them back in before the 1 o'clock kickoff, etc., etc.?
Yeah, look, I think that's, look, you know, most of the players nowadays, I don't think half the players probably watch half the games anyway. You know, it'd be the staff. It'd be all those old cronies watching the matches. Like, really,
it's the World Cup. It's the greatest competition in the world. Mate.
Exactly. But we've had Champions League games on a Friday night or Thursday night, and players are playing cards in the other room, and you're thinking, oh my God, but that's just how it is. So yeah, we might adjust. Look, when England are playing, we might well adjust one or two of the sessions to mean that we can come back in and watch the match. And in some ways, it'll be quite a strange dynamic to be able to go out and train, come back in, maybe have a game on in the background that there's a bit of interest on. Who knows? I think we're all we're all sort of in anticipation of what it's going to feel like, aren't we? Not just, usually it's the World Cup and you're all excited and you might be on holiday trying to get in a bar somewhere to watch the game. It's going to feel a bit weird, but I think we're all waiting to see exactly how it will feel, won't it, in November, having a World Cup at this time of the year. So it'll be new for everyone.
I know I've got a strange brain, but you've encountered it a few times before. It just suddenly popped in my head too that there will be some players, and you have one in Benik Afobe, who was doing brilliantly well at England development ages and will probably be watching some players that he played along during those development years. So again, is that just a little element of just keeping a little eye across that he's not sitting in the corner moping because, you know, he might have thought a few years ago he would be there and things? Or am I raising something totally new for you to worry about?
Hey, listen, I'm a manager. I think there's always things to worry about, whether they're new, old, or been around a little while. So Benik at the moment's injured, so he's got enough on his plate to get back fit over this break. But look, there'll be players. You know, we've got Tom Bradshaw that sat there, you know, in the nicest possible way, praying that all of the Welsh strikers get injured so he gets a call up. So he'll be sat there waiting, just maybe, if he can, you know, score a couple of goals at the weekend, that he might get in their squad, you know. So I think lots of players have different interests. We've got Zian Fleming, who'll be, you know, be keen to see how Holland do. I mean, I don't think they'll be distracted to that point. I think they'll just get on with their day as per normal and maybe catch a game if they can outside of those training hours.
Just while you mentioned Tom Bradshaw, there is another off-centre question that I want, but it was something that struck me when he got his hat-trick the other week. A la Steve Claridge, he plays with his socks virtually around his ankles. If he's got shin pads in, they're very, very small ones. Has he got shin pads? Are they little, tiny, little skinny ones?
At the weekend, he had to come off because he forgot to put his shin pads back in at half-time, So, yeah, he got a little ticking off for that. But, yeah, no, he has got them, but they're just players wear the just enough to cover their shin bones, some of them, and that's it. Some players just don't like them.
But might therefore be more susceptible to picking up an injury, which is why I wondered, again, as a manager, whether you ever would go to a player like that and going, I know you don't like them. Oh, it helps give you a freedom, et cetera, but you stand a 20% more chance of smashing your shin bone and being out of my team for 3 months. So what are we going to do? I mean, does it come up, Gary, or am I going too minutiae here?
Yeah, look, I think players, you know, certainly have the autonomy to choose what shin pads they wear and how they go about protecting their own bodies, you know. So, to be honest with you, mate, I've got enough to worry about just to try and win a game of football and keep everybody happy and you know, rather than worrying of what pads have got, Clem. I'd love to have such a detailed brain like yours, but I can even think about those things.
Yeah, it's because yours is full of worthwhile stuff. It was just the peculiar way in which I sometimes watch football. Now, when you got the Millwall job, and I mentioned the 3-year anniversary, I remember you saying to me that post Derby County and post Stoke, you were looking for an opportunity where you were at a club that was a little more, I can't remember the precise word, but I think it was earthy, a little bit more dirty for you to get your hands on and work with. I don't know if you recall thinking that, saying that at the time, but I wondered if it had met your remit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, what I said at the time, I think, was I want, you know, like, you know, Derby at the time had the Derby way, but was, you know, to me felt like that needed to be defined rather than just, it felt a little bit arrogant in some ways, but I know it wasn't meant in that way. And it was one of the conversations I used to have. Well, let's define what the Derby way is, you know, because actually a lot of European clubs have a model of how they want to play. And I think that's actually quite an important thing. And Stoke at the time, obviously, was, you know, clearly it was just a very difficult situation for the club and for anyone that went in as a manager, as different managers have shown. So, but on the back of that, you know, I felt it was important to go to a club that kind of really knew what it was, you know, and perhaps was a little bit more pragmatic. You know, I'd been at Birmingham. I'd enjoyed that side of it, that real kind of working, you know, look, I know some of those areas are working class, but that real working class fan base that hadn't been in the Premier League and hadn't had the riches of the Premier League. And the fans appreciated that hard work, that energy, that front foot football, that aggressive football. And Millwall are exactly that. You know, I'm not saying that sometimes when you finish in the top 10 that you don't raise those expectations to perhaps some of the fans might want a little bit more, but that's natural. You know, I've always said that it's not for the manager to dull down expectations. It's for me to actually get people thinking we can achieve something. And unfortunately, sometimes you end up falling flat on your face if you don't. But I think that's how it should be. So, yeah, I've loved my time there. I've really enjoyed the 3 years. You know, as you well know, I mean, London is an incredible city. It's a fabulous place to spend, you know, 3 or 4 days a week. And the club's brilliant. The club's full of good people. The owner, John, is one of the best owners around, in my opinion, because, you know, he's so grounded. He runs the club in the right way. The likes of Steve as chief exec, you know, run the club in the right way with that real sort of honesty and that real feeling of trying to do it how the club should be and maybe small steps. So it's a good club. Really enjoyed it. 3 years. Can't believe it's been 3 years, but you know, it's been a fairly successful 3 years in certain ways, depending on how you define that.
Is it a club that you have to get and the club has to get you, or the fan base, the culture, the history has to get you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think even 3 years in, there's times when I feel that maybe not having been an ex-player at Millwall, it still doesn't feel like, you know, you're completely accepted. But I think that's just the way the club is, because it is a very, you know, it's a very, look, there's so much bad press about Millwall, and I get some of that and I understand some of that. But I think there's also a real family club at heart there. You know, I've seen so many fundraising things done by various charities, and Millwall are always near the top. You know, they really get behind really good causes. You know, other clubs' causes. There's been stuff recently where, you know, a young West Ham fan died, and the club get right behind that, because I think certain things transcend football, don't they? Rivalry, but yeah, look, it's a fantastic football club. I've really enjoyed being part of it for 3 years, and who knows how long I'll be part of it to continue. Like, I'm a championship manager. You know, you never look long term. You always look at the next two or three games, but 3 years has flown by.
Give me your thoughts on the current managerial landscape. As somebody that has shown they can hold down a job for an extended period of time, I mean, it's madness out there, isn't it?
It's madness, but it is, you know, and there's no right way of sort of rationalising it, I don't think, and there's no right way of saying it's okay, because, you know, most walk of life, you wouldn't go into a job that you throw yourself in wholeheartedly, and the reality is you could be doing that job for 6 weeks and never get that job again. It just feels crazy. But I think if you're a football manager and you take a job as a football manager, you'd be pretty stupid to feel that was a long-term career option for you. You'd be pretty stupid to think that was going to be a really kind of a job full of equilibrium and consistency. And so therefore, you have to take the rough with the smooth. I think deep down, most people in football love football because of the highs and the lows and the extreme nature of it, and wouldn't actually like a 9-to-5 steady job, you know, behind the desk. So, it is what it is. It's crackers. It's not great, but it is what we choose to do. And if you choose to do it, you have to accept what comes with it, in my opinion.
I mean, do you talk to a lot of other managers and sort of get a feel for things? Because I'm looking over the last few weeks at Michael Beale deciding not to go to Wolves and stay with QPR. I've certainly spoken to people who have had second thoughts about making the next step on the ladder because they perceived that the fit wasn't quite right. At the precise time we're recording this week's Official EFL podcast, it looks like Nathan Jones is going to leave Luton Town to go to Southampton, but we're still awaiting an announcement. Perhaps by the time listeners hear this, it will already have been decided one way or another. I mean, having made the leap yourself, will you be a little more cautious, careful about fit and precision going forward?
I don't know. I think you have to take things individually every time. I mean, I turned down Stoke in the Premier League before I joined them in the Championship, you know, because, and certainly financially, it would have been a far better move for me to take that in the Premier League. But it just felt at the time I was second with Derby in the Championship, it just didn't feel like the right time. And it's very difficult for someone else to judge that. So, you know, if you're Nathan, I'm sure there'll be a little bit of Nathan that, you know, when he left for Stoke, you know, and then went back and obviously did a fantastic job both times. I'm sure there'd be a little bit of him wouldn't necessarily want to leave Luton, but the lure of a Premier League opportunity with a club like Southampton is one that might never come around again in his career. It might never come around again in many people's careers. So there's always going to be that decision to make, isn't there? You know, football's one where people always question loyalty, and I understand that, but at the same time, I don't think a manager's loyalty can ever be quite the same as a fan's loyalty. You know, it's a career still for a lot of managers, and most people in a career, if they got offered an opportunity of double, maybe even triple the money and a much better job parameters, I would say 99% of people would take it without even thinking about what it would feel like. So I think for someone like Michael, for Nathan, I can understand where they've been and what they're going through. But each one's so individual, isn't it? It's you know, but it does seem a really good opportunity for Nathan. And like I said, I'm sure he probably doesn't want to leave Luton, but maybe it's just one of those that maybe you just can't turn down.
Skybet Championship fixtures this coming weekend. Then the season will resume the weekend of the 10th of December. Your Friday night game is Birmingham against Sunderland. Saturday, all 3 o'clock kickoffs. Fifth place Watford head to Bristol City. Sheffield United third, missed out on a chance to go top again with that Rotherham United home defeat I mentioned in the opening. They travel to Cardiff. QPR, who are in sixth, head to Coventry, have won their last three. Norwich in fourth, entertain Middlesbrough. Tuber Akpom scored in all four of Michael Carrick's games so far in charge of Middlesbrough. Gary's Millwall head to Preston, who have won their last three. I'll just leave that hanging in the air and have a little look at you as I say that. Poor old Wigan, who are going through a really tough time at the moment, just 1 point for the last 21. They entertain Blackpool. And I guess the game of the weekend is on Sunday, lunchtime kickoff. It is first v second. Burnley suffered only their second defeat of the season last weekend at Sheffield United, entertaining Blackburn. No draws so far this season for them. Are we any clearer on the contenders, or is this a distinctly different season to last year, where obviously we had a couple of runaways in Fulham and Bournemouth?
Yeah, I'm always reticent to, I think everyone says it every year, oh, maybe this is the most open championship this ever, but I think I've heard that for probably the last 10 years running. I do feel this season is probably as competitive as it's ever been. Maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, I would have probably said I don't see a Fulham in there. But if I remember rightly, after about 10, 12 games last season, Fulham weren't where they were after 25 games, 30 games, you know. So Burnley look as though they're the team that are just starting to make those roads. And again, like you say, lost to Sheffield United last week. And then ironically, you could write it, couldn't you, that Sheffield United then lose to Rotherham the next game. So it's a crazy league. I don't see too many teams running away with it this year. And I think that just means that it's going to be as competitive as ever. You know, I can't remember a season where it hasn't been. I think teams like us feel like you could be in the mix once again. But it's those match winners, isn't it? But the teams like Burnley, teams like Sheffield United, you know, when you've got those sort of £20 million strikers or you've got that little bit of extra quality, you know, you're always going to win a few more games than some of the other teams. So that's a challenge for all of us. But, you know, it's a brilliant, listen, the AFL, as you all know, is an incredible, they're incredible leagues, aren't they? Because there's no other leagues like them in the world, is there? But, you know, the bottom team can beat the top team on any given evening, on any given weekend. So why we love it so much.
Yeah, I think it's just the patchy form this time around where you understand that if a team like QPR have won 5 out of 6, probably hard to maintain that over the course of a season. But, you know, you win 5 out of 6, then you only take 1 point from your possible next 12. Or Sheffield United lost one of their first 11, suddenly lost 4 out of 9. Norwich, 7 wins in 8, and then suddenly only 2 in 9. That's pretty drastic change in fortunes, it feels to me.
Yeah, and you look at someone like Blackburn, I think you said they're in second, and they've lost, I think at one point Blackburn had lost the same amount as a team in the relegation zone, if I'm yeah. right.
Not anymore. Of their 20 matches, they have lost 8 of them as we speak now, but they've won 12. I've often wondered, that's... you know, it's all right having unbeaten runs and all the rest of it, but if an unbeaten run includes a load of draws, you'd be better off losing one, winning one. You'd have more points.
We had this debate last season because I think we had a 15-game spell where we drew something like 10 of the games. And I'll be really honest, you know, you get to the point where you actually, sometimes as a manager, you pride yourself as much on winning games, but also on, oh, we've only lost 5 games this year so far. Well, actually, it kind of doesn't matter. You know, you have to try and win games in the Championship. And like you say, you know, apart from the effect mentally it has on you if you keep losing games, as long as you don't lose too many back-to-back, it's not too much of an issue. So certainly something we've tried to do this year is certainly something that, you know, you have to go and push to win games of football. And if that's risking losing it in the last 10, 15 minutes, then sometimes that's the risk you have to take.
Yeah, that ties in beautifully with something Vincent Kompany said after his team, well, shipped a few at Sheffield United. He seemed pretty calm about it, and he talked about it being a good opportunity to press the reset, reevaluate, and for the squad to perhaps think that they're not invincible and there are going to be some challenges to get round across the... So it could turn out to be a blessing in disguise, could it, just for that little bit of a reboot?
Well, I think that the impressive bit about Vincent so far is I think he's always seemed so level-headed. I mean, I spoke to him after the game up there when we played them, and they played very well and beat us. And he doesn't feel like an ex-Man City captain, you know, strutting around the Championship. You know, he just seems like a really good guy that actually has connected really well with his team and has spoke with a real sense after games like Sheffield United. He understands how it works as a player. And sometimes you also have to find the positive, of course, when your team's been on such a good run. And the positive of that is exactly what he says. It's that you have an opportunity to realise you are fallible and realise you are beatable, and now you've got to try and recreate that run again. So, you know, I'm sure his words will have a really you know, good and strong effect on his team to bounce back, which I'm sure they will do.
That's really good to hear, and very welcoming and respectful of what you've achieved in the game and knew about you and your team and everything when you got together for that little head-to-head.
Yeah, but I think that's, you know, that seems to me the type of guy he is. You know, sometimes, like, I'm not suggesting that people who've played at the top level, you know, are all arrogant and don't want to speak to anyone down here. But, you know, we have had some managers in the Championship that, you know, won't have a beer afterwards or are not really interested in that, and that's fine. But what it struck me with Vincent, he was really keen to know, you know, who you play. I think he asked me who are the best teams you've played, you know, what challenges did you have against them. So it seems to me that, and I actually heard him saying something about it, he would have loved to play in the Championship. And I think people respect the fact that it is a great league to be part of. It's not always the most perfect and beautiful football, but it is so entertaining because it's such a competitive league. The teams are so aggressive. All the games are very, very different. You know, and look, it's easier to enjoy, I'm sure, the job when you're top of the league. But, you know, he's earned the right to be there. They've brought a lot of players in and he's had to work incredibly hard to gel them.
A reminder that Skybet Leagues 1 and 2 will continue throughout the World Cup with a little bit of tweaking of the fixture schedule, I think, to try and avoid clashing with any major games involving, well, certainly England fixtures this coming weekend. They're all on Saturday. They are all at 3 o'clock. Third place Sheffield Wednesday head to Accrington Stanley. Bolton in sixth head to Cambridge. I'll talk to Gary about them in a minute, as they're his former team. Lost 6 of their last 7. Peterborough in fourth go to Exeter. Ipswich lost just 2 games so far there at home to Cheltenham. Plymouth, Argyle, the leaders, just astonishing. Lost 2 of their first 4. 11 wins in an unbeaten last 13 since to open up that gap at the top. They're at Lincoln City, fifth place Portsmouth head to Morecambe. Let's do Cambridge first of all. I mean, again, is it inevitable? Mark Bonner's had such a great run that now's a little test for him along the way.
Yeah, I think so. I think they started the season really, really well. I mean, couldn't have started any better. They beat us in the cup, knocked us out. So, but they've had such a good run. And again, I think the first six or seven games, they were very, very impressive. A team like Cambridge, look, you know, I started there as an apprentice, so I understand what that club's about. And it's always hard to maintain that, and it's always hard to keep going, and you're always going to get one or two poor results. And I think, you know, for a young manager like Mark, that will be a really good experience for him, you know, having to be different, to be having to deal with that side of a game and having to deal with those bad runs that, you know, if they can come through that and stay in the middle of the pack in that division, then I'm sure he will be a much better manager for it. But yeah, look, you're never going to win all the time, are you? You know, part of football management is learning how to handle the poor spells and not panic as much as it is the great runs of form that you go on.
Yeah, you did start your career at Cambridge United. Do you remember who you made your debut as a 17-year-old against in September 1991 as well, Gary? Can you remember?
Was it when I came on at the Den and scored the winner? It was a header stuck in the stanchion, Clem, after coming on as substitute after 25 minutes. But the ironic bit about it is I got brought off with 20 minutes to go. So, yeah, John Beck was very good at trying to teach a young player a lesson, and it was quite a harsh lesson. If that was the game you're talking about. But
I was. Now, did you is your encyclopedic memory picking up on that naturally, or is it because people at Millwall have played it to you or talked to you about it since going there as manager? Or do you genuinely remember every bit?
No one's mentioned it. I generally remember it. I remember coming on a sub.
And getting the hook as sub.
Or in the winner. And literally, it was a header from the sort of just inside the box. It actually stuck in the stanchion for the winner. And it's on YouTube somewhere, I think, in the archives. And literally got brought off. I remember taking a throw in very quickly. That's what I remember doing, because the fans there, I should have known before I took the job what it was going to be like. But the fans were absolutely caning me. But I remember chasing a player down the line and sliding to win the ball and missing him. And I think he crossed it and they nearly scored, and that was it. Becky had me off straight away, subbed the sub. So, 17 years old, pretty embarrassing, but couldn't take the goal away from me, mate, unfortunately.
I'm just imagining 17-year-old Gary Rower on that particular day has to make his debut at the Old Den, which was arguably even more ferocious than the new one. Scores on his debut, but as the substitute gets though, that's just about an entire nervous, anxious roller coaster high look. That's just about a whole football career wrapped up in 20 minutes, isn't it?
It is. I forgot to mention as well, I had to throw the ice cold water on the players before. And I remember trying to do it to Daishi, and Daishi turned around and went, "If you throw that water at me, I'm going to knock you out." So as a 17-year-old, there was all sorts of lessons going on there. He was only joking. But yeah, as a kid, you used to have to, like if you were sub even, you used to have to throw the ice water on the players because they used to have cold showers back then. Hey, maybe, well, I think Becky was ahead of his game in certain ways. Yeah, but certainly the cold showers were just before the game. So.
Vim Hof and all that stuff to make you more alert and things.
Yeah.
I get it. As much as we could talk about Plymouth, we do it every single week. I think anybody would acknowledge that sort of form, 13 unbeaten, 11 wins, is astonishing. I must just mention Burton as well, where you started your management career. I wonder whether they've just hit the wall a wee bit, and that huge high of achieving Championship football, you know, the natural order would say that they're probably still punching a little bit above their weight. No disrespect to the incredible work that Ben Robinson, the chairman, has done.
Yeah, I still speak to Ben from time to time, and I think, you know, Jimmy leaving and sort of and Dino taking over, I think, you know, they had a little bounce, didn't they, for two or three games, and looked like they were just going to get out of it, and then I think they've lost a couple to go back in it. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tough season for them. I think I'm really, really hoping they can do enough just to stay in the division and kick on again, you know, because it's a great club full of good people. But like you say, it's, you know, they don't get a big fan base. There's not a huge budget, you know, to work with, because it's Ben really that runs the club and the community, all the work, all more or less, well, not on his own, but it's him that spearheads it. And it's never going to be a giant club, is it? So yeah, but hopefully they'll stay in the division.
Yeah, fantastic football club. Skybet League 2, your fixtures this coming weekend, then they are all 3 o'clock on Saturday. Seventh place, Carlisle entertain Walsall. Barrow currently fourth, they go to Crawley. Gillingham, the giant killers, knocking Brentford out of the Carabao Cup on penalties. They entertain Northampton, who a giant killed themselves in the FA Cup last weekend. We've got Leighton Orient, the leaders, only the second league defeat of their season. Midweek, they go to Harrogate. Congratulations to Ian Henderson, who broke Rochdale's all-time goal-scoring record in midweek. Rochdale play Mansfield. Stevenage against Hartlepool is second top against second bottom. Bradford in fifth. They head to Sutton United. I quite like that. Sutton United, where they've come from, up against multi-trophied Mark Hughes team. And Swindon, who are sixth, they entertain Tranmere. A couple of stories stood out for me. Alex Morris has dropped back from being manager at Crewe Alexander to retake the assistant's role. Lee Bell is in interim charge. Now, on the one hand, Gary, I like the fact that a club stalwart doesn't have an attempt to be manager and then lose the connection. But from a practical point of view, how the hell is that going to be for Alex Morris to suddenly find himself as number two? Because they're very different roles, aren't they? I mean, to do it as a straight switch as opposed to maybe go away for a year and come back.
Yeah, because Belly's a former player of mine. I speak to from time to time at Burton. So, I was just going to ask the question, what's Belly doing then? Because he was assistant manager. So for them to swap over, I mean, look, maybe having done the roles, maybe they feel or the club feel that actually one of them stood out more as a manager. I don't know. It's hard to know unless you're in that situation. But you would imagine it has to be amicable. Otherwise, you wouldn't step down to that role, would you? You would simply leave. So, I mean, it's always tough, though, for the players. You know, the players have seen you as the manager and they spoke to you as the manager to then not be the manager and be assistant. So yeah, it does seem it's certainly going to be some interesting meetings going on there over the next week or two. I hope it works out because the Crewe, another great football club with excellent history, and you like to see that type of team doing well.
Yeah, I think if my memory serves me right, Terry Skiverton did drop down at Yeovil Town from manager to become assistant when the club brought Gary Johnson back. So there's probably a few precedents along the way. As I say, I like the loyalty factor because I hate it when somebody's been behind the scenes for 10 years, tries their hand at the first team management job, it doesn't work out, and then they're gone and the whole association goes out of the window. The last thing I wanted to mention to you was the fun and games that Gillingham had en route to playing Brentford and knocking out of the Carabao Cup. They couldn't make the last quarter of a mile because the bus got stuck in traffic. And from the way Neil Harris told the story, the route they took as well was unorthodox. They were literally having to help each other climb over barriers and all sorts to make it to the ground. So it's a great reward. Have you had any sort of trouble travelling over the years? Any sort of major traumas along the way? Anything stick in the mind?
I've had a few, yeah. I remember playing for Cambridge and travelling to Hartlepool on the day. And I remember getting there about 3:15, literally getting changed on the coach. I remember at Burton, when Pesh was a manager, we played Bury once and we got there 20 minutes before the game. I can remember it as clear as day because I used to take the warm-up. So we went out to do a warm-up and it was about a 5-minute warm-up. It was like the players have done about 2 runs, ran straight back in, got changed, and, you know, got a kit on and went straight back out to play the game. So it's ironic because sometimes actually those days work quite well. And if you're someone like Chopper down at Gillingham, you know, you actually, I think you could really use that now, can't you? Because they've not had a fantastic season so far. So for him to almost use that, you know, the story and that sort of adversity, I think you could probably see Gillingham now hopefully kicking on in their division after such a big win. But look, around London at the moment, you know, sitting in traffic for 2 hours, 3 hours doesn't seem too alien to me, no, at all, because it's pretty much every day.
Yeah, you could take public transport, of course. It's quite quick and efficient. Although, of course, there are various strikes going on at the moment. So whenever you leave the house, you're never quite sure whether you're going to make a journey in 20 minutes or whether you're going to have to walk or flag down one of the much in-demand Ubers or something like that. It has been fantastic to chat. You will be having a look through your World Cup wall chart, will you, once you get your game at Preston out of the way and working out your own viewing and which game? Are you going to literally sit at home on the sofa and just watch everything you possibly can?
Who knows? Look, I love football anyway. I think we're all big football fans, aren't we, regardless of whether we're working or not. So I'll watch as many games as I can. I'll watch it with keenness. We'll have some on after training. I might even have a little peek on my phone during training if the other lads are doing the session. So, let's see what happens. It's a World Cup. It's an incredible competition. We all dreamed about it when we were kids. So let's see what it's like. And if it has the same feeling in November and December than it did in the summer months.
We appreciate your time. Great to talk, Gary. Thank you.
What's up, man? Cheers, buddy.
That is it for this episode. A big thank you to Gary Rout for sharing his expertise and insight across the EFL's three divisions. We don't normally blow our own trumpets, but on this occasion we're going to, because over the past 7 days, the official EFL podcast was highly commended in the Sports Podcast of the Year category at the prestigious Broadcast Sports Awards. I'll just read you a couple of the judges' comments. A really authentic listen covering a huge number of teams and very clearly serving a community of fans, said one. And another one said, delivering a quality community felt podcast to the EFL fan, inclusive of all teams and stories from the teams, players and football clubs / communities. If you've enjoyed listening to this episode, then do please give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. Or alternatively, you could just tell people about us. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.